Success isn't given, it's earned. And earning it means becoming the person who deserves it. The bottom line is where we cut through the chaos to simplify success, uncovering the strategies, mindset, and resilience it takes to win. Real stories, expert insights, and practical tools. Because the only way to the top is by putting in the work. This is The Bottom Line.
Welcome to The Bottom Line. I'm your host, Ryan Herpin, and I'm thrilled to have you join me on this new journey. In a world diluted with thousands of different surefire ways to become rich, famous, and happy, I strive to make it clear. On this show, we cut through the chaos to simplify success. I believe success isn't given, it's earned. And the only way to earn it is to become a person who deserves it. Together, we'll uncover strategies that work, share inspiring stories, and dive deep into what fuels greatness. Today, I want to talk about leveling up leadership and how we can improve leadership when leadership's falling short. Leadership is the foundation of any successful business or organization, but what happens when leadership isn't up to par? Poor decision-making, low team morale, and stagnation can result when leaders fail to evolve. The good news? Leadership isn't static. It can be developed, refined, and strengthened. Have you ever been a part of a team where leadership struggled? Maybe you're in a leadership position yourself and feel like you could be doing more to guide your team effectively. No matter where you are in your leadership journey, there's always opportunities to level up. And today, we're going to explore how to do just that. To help us dive into this topic, I'm excited to introduce our first guest, Nick Baker. Nick is a wildly experienced financial advisor with IMG Financial Group. He works closely with business leaders to help them create financial stability and long-term strategic growth. Nick, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Ryan. I really appreciate the intro. Good to be here. Excited to be your first guest.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure to have you with us. There are many different avenues of leadership, but I want to get right to the bottom line and talk about the hard topic of financial leadership. From your experience, how does strong financial leadership contribute to the overall business success?
It's a great question. I think that in general, we help a lot of people with their personal finances. You know, as you've experienced, everybody watching, listening, your money is very important to you. So when it comes to running a company, being a leader at a company, it's hard to not have anxiety, distractions, whatever it may be, if your own personal finances aren't in order. So a lot of that is helping business leaders get their own personal life organized and get a plan and really make sure that they're feeling comfortable about what's going on at home with their personal finances. It makes it a lot simpler, a lot more clean and effective when you can go to work and you're not worried about your personal finances, and then you can be a more effective leader. But also on the human side, you know, most of us worry about our money, the safety of our money, the longevity of all of that. So when you think about the people that you work with or your employees, the people that work for you, you know, anytime that they have less stress around money, it just filters down from the top. And it really benefits everybody to be prudent, to be responsible. But from a management perspective especially, just understanding that people have these outside stressors that they bring to work that are important to them and that do have an impact on their day-to-day life.
I really like that. I like how you emphasized how their personal finances can be a stressor that impacts other areas, specifically leadership and business. I find that really powerful and something smart to really think about. If you can't control what you have outside of work in business, how can you expect to control what's with inside the business, right? So that leads me to another thing to really kind of bring up it baffles a lot of people. What common leadership pitfalls have you observed in business owners, and how can they overcome those?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is, you know, one of the things we just touched on is making sure that your personal life is in order. I always use the analogy, it's kind of tongue in cheek, right? But if you went to the gym and you were like, hey, you know, I want to get in better shape and I want to be healthier and all this stuff, and you show up and the trainer that you meet with is, you know, morbidly obese and doesn't look like they're in good shape, and right, it's just kind of hard to take advice from somebody like that, right? And we're all, you know, hypocrites in various manners, but in general, It's a lot easier to follow somebody that's practicing what they preach. When it comes to management, a lot of the pitfalls have to do, in my view, it's really a lack of empathy, but then also accountability, right? So we have to really make sure that we're bringing our whole self to work. And just like I said, right, you understand that people have these other problems. They have health problems, they have financial problems. And so when you can treat somebody like a whole person and know that they bring their whole self to work, you can acknowledge that. You don't have to solve all of their life problems, but keeping that in mind, right? I think a lot of times we think people can be expendable or we can replace them. In some instances, you can, some employees, the nature of the business might be more transactional, but we've often found that the more you can treat people, like you would a friend or family, and treat them like a whole person, acknowledge that there's other things going on, really just have a conversation, right? And everything leads back to communication and how good of a communicator you can be, the questions that you can ask. I think most of the problems, I think we'd all agree, most of the problems we have in life are really just a communication issue. So taking a step back and trying to figure out if everybody's on the same page, oftentimes we're not, but figuring out how to ask the right questions to get there. And then when you factor in that we're all bringing different things to the table from our life, our personal life, our business experience, really just trying to keep that in mind as you go about the day-to-day, it can be challenging.
I really love that. There's a lot to unpack there, but there's one thing in particular that struck something deep for me, and it's a serious core value of mine, and it's accountability. And I think something that is overlooked a lot of the time is the accountability aspect of financial discipline, right? We look at accountability when it comes to metrics in the business for all different kinds of things, efficiency, effectiveness, as well as management, but where is that accountability for the financial side of things, right? Especially in like a home life, right? Husband, wife, where's that accountability coming from? If you're the one managing it, the one that's responsible for it, who's going to keep you to a standard of discipline and straying away from the automatic pitfalls of hypocrisy? Like you said, we're all hypocrites in some things, but I liked your analogy, the example that you used of you wouldn't go to a physical trainer that is obese, right? It doesn't really present what it is you're after, and it kind of can hurt that trust. So if your finances were out there in the open for everyone to see, what would it express to the people that are in your charge? If they could see how you manage your own personal money, how would they feel about you handling the business money? Right.
Yeah,
And I
oh,
find that
totally.
accountability aspect really, really critical. That brings up another question. Where do you find business owners can find that accountability in their personal life that can carry over to their business life?
Yeah, that's such a great question, and I was hoping you would go there because I think the answer is as much as you can definitely implement things into your life to help have other people help you and systems help you with accountability. But what I've realized, and I think most people realize, is that for the most part, nobody's coming to save you. No one is going to come and be you and live your life for you. There's a very serious element of self-accountability, right? And figuring out what you need to do to make it happen for you. But it really comes back to, again, personal financial planning. And we say kind of tongue in cheek all the time, you can have whatever you want in this life. You just can't have everything you want. Right. And so you have to figure out what it is. If it's 15 things that you want, right, we help people whittle it down to maybe the top five. And then we can actually make a plan to get there because, it's just it's a process of figuring out what you're willing to suffer for, what you're willing to burn for, really what you're willing to hold yourself accountable for. What we found on a basic, psychological level, especially with finances, but this translates to everything. It's a lot easier to strive for three or four main goals that you really want than 17 different things that you kind of want. Maybe you're not sure, right? Maybe, they're further down on the list, but as a financial advisor, right, we always joke that we're not really, it's not a battle of trying to get people to save money or invest better or do this investment product, right? It's really more battling consumerism, right? We all deal with this. It's so hard. Like they're constantly being marketed us another thing that we need to buy and that we need to have, and that will make us content or whatever it is, right? And so just figuring out what are those actual things and putting some thought into it. The things that we want, even material-wise, but also like our career, our life, our family. What are the things that we actually want? And then we can come up with a concise plan to get there, rather than kind of surrendering to the culture and the society that we're in, which is, you know, we're constantly battling vacations and do I buy a jet ski and do I get the new flat screen TV and, you know, do braces for the kids and all these things that we're juggling. Let's just have a conversation. Let's communicate, figure out what's really, really important to you. And the last thing I'll say real quick on that is just, we always tell people reverse engineer your life. When you're on your deathbed, just imagine, you know, you die peacefully at 95, everybody's surrounding you and your family, your friends, but what are you going to really wish that you had done, right? Just think about that. Just try to imagine you're in that position. What are the 3, 4, 5 main themes of your life? Now let's go do that. Let's build a plan around that. You know, I'm pretty confident it's not going to be, well, I really wish I would have bought that wakeboarding boat. You know, maybe it is, right? Maybe that's just an example for me. But if you really put pen to paper and put your mind to the task of figuring out what it is that you're trying to achieve, the efficiency goes way up, and that's really what we're trying to achieve.
I really love what you said, and there's something you said in there that is absolute gold that I'm going to write down, and I'm going to encourage our listeners to write that down as well. You can have whatever you want, but you can't have everything you want. And to prioritize that, I find that very, very powerful and important. And I think that's something that I'm going to have to remember forever, because the strength in that is really, really there. Because if you avert your view to everything, you're never going to get anywhere. You couldn't possibly achieve everything you could ever imagine. And that's so important. Now, I think this is fantastic. I'm loving how deep this is going and just how much insight you're giving to us. And I want to continue this conversation. So we'll be right back after this short break with more insights from Nick Baker. Don't go anywhere.
Success isn't given, it's earned. And earning it means becoming the person who deserves it. The bottom line is where we cut through the chaos to simplify success. Uncovering the strategies, mindset, and resilience it takes to win. Real stories, expert insights, and practical tools. Because the only way to the top is by putting in the work. This is The Bottom Line.
Welcome back. We're continuing our conversation with Nick Baker about leveling up leadership through financial strategy. I want to dig a little bit deeper and get to some of the bigger questions that could make a difference for some of our listeners. And I would like to start with what role does financial literacy play in becoming a better leader in personal life and business life?
A huge role. I think, you know, like I said before, money impacts all of us. I always jokingly tell people, you know, even if you're a multi-100 millionaire, billionaire, even they have a budget, right? There's no such thing as unlimited resources. And so we all are budgeting or planning or trying to manage our resources on some level, right? And so I think the biggest thing is really making sure that you have a basic understanding. The biggest hurdle to that is they don't teach us this stuff in school. There's a formal education process in the United States for personal finance. And that's really it's a problem. We're really at a loss. And so if somebody didn't teach you growing up, you either have to self-teach or you hire somebody like us. The trick though, and kind of the catch that happens is sometimes people hire us and they still don't understand really what's going on. So I always tell people, you know, anything, if you're getting a surgery, if you're getting a new investment, you're getting a new house, you need to make the professional that you're working with explain it to you in a way that is acceptable for you. You don't have to become an expert in the stock market or a real estate expert or, you know, a surgeon overnight. But I want you to explain it to me like I'm in 7th grade or whatever, 10th grade, right? So that I can understand it. Because here's the real real important thing, especially when it comes to financial planning, but other long-term decisions like that. There will come a time when things don't go according to plan, right? The stock market has, and the economy has recessions, it has corrections, it goes down. Oftentimes, as much as it goes up, there are painful periods. And so when you get into a period that maybe isn't as planned or is more painful, if you don't really understand what you're doing, psychologically, it's so much easier to abandon the plan, right? So I always tell people, don't just tell us, yeah, it makes sense. You sound smart, you're wearing a suit, so you must know what you're talking about. I'm like, no, I really want you to understand the basics of really what we're trying to achieve here. That way you're just as committed to the plan as I am, right? So that would be kind of the major pitfall. The second one is just natural human behavior. I always tell people, you don't have to score an A+ on financial planning, investing. If you can get a B-, B+, just a B average, you're going to hit overwhelmingly most of your goals. But that just comes through consistency, right? If you want to talk about a test, right? How do you score well on a test? You just study, right? And study consistently and really do your best. But if you can be consistent over time when it comes to money, you can make other little minor, I call them micro mistakes, or maybe things that aren't efficient. Like maybe you do go buy the wakeboarding boat, right? But if you're continually saving, continually investing, really making compound growth towards your goal, I'll use the workout analogy. It's the exact same thing, right? The first time you go to the gym, you don't really see any results, right? But you go for a year, you're like, oh man, I kind of see how this works. I'm obviously benefiting. You go for 5 or 10 years, right? We all see these people with like really nice, physique. So they got big muscles, and you ask them, well, how did you do it? It's like, well, I just worked out for the last decade or 5 years or whatever it is. And I ate right. It's the same thing with financial planning, right? If you can just be consistent and save money and commit to your plan and really stick to your plan, that consistency almost outweighs everything else. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. There was some also gems there as well. And if I were to kind of summarize that into some of the major points that I picked up, was the literacy applies more than just understanding everything, right? You said you could get a B and still hit almost all of your goals financially, right? I like that idea because it's not about being perfect at it. It's not about knowing everything. It's not about understanding to the fullest. It's about just learning it, understanding enough to be able to make those smart financial moves, to stay on top of it, to have that discipline and ability to move forward consistently with your plans and goals because of your financial literacy. I find that really, really important. And it's overlooked a lot in business. Through my experience dealing with different clients, I see an inconsistency in the understanding of financial management and planning. I see a lot of consistency in understanding how the operation works, how the product is built, how the service is done, but not so much how to manage the financial aspect of the business. And that carries over. If you don't understand how to handle your personal finances, you can't understand your business finances. But I also like how you brought up working with someone like yourself or other financial advisors or coaches in general. It's not about understanding all of it in the most complex ways possible. It's about simplifying it, making it easy to understand and to remember and then apply. I operate off of a philosophy. Knowledge is not power. Contrary to a lot of belief, applied knowledge is power. And I feel like that really does make a difference with financial literacy. So how can leaders instill financial discipline and responsibility within others, right? Whether it be in the home life, in your kids, in your spouse, or in a business with employees, managers, and other people you put in charge of financial discipline?
Yeah, I think the best one, it's a great question. I think the best one is to really lead by example, right? Others can tell what's going on. And generally, people have a sense for how you're living. And so living by example is a big thing. But I think if you're the person that's the business owner or the leader, or the manager that's in charge, I think using your network and the network of the organization to bring in outside advisors, help really making people available to your people for financial literacy, having resources available for them, the benefits that your company has, whether that be a 401k, access to a 401k plan advisor, financial planner. A lot of our business owners will make us available to their employees, right? They say, hey, you know, I use this advisor personally. They also maybe manage the company's benefits, but if you ever have a question or you need something or want to understand something, you should reach out. So making those people available. And then also I would just add, you know, maybe bring them in every once in a while, a couple times a year to explain basic concepts. Because I think if most people knew, hey, if I saved two, three, four, $5,000 a year, maybe I don't make a ton of money, maybe I do, but if I can just save, you know, $4,000 a year or $10,000 a year or $15,000, and I can do that for 20 years, well, gosh darn, I'll have $1 million saved by the time I'm retired. You know, I just think most people don't, they haven't been given access to that information. And so the more opportunity you can give people to access the information, the more options they have, the more ability that they have to execute. Because you're right, just knowing, we all have Google, right? We can Google almost any fact that we want in 0.1 seconds, but it's what you do with the fact, right? Again, the workout analogy, we can create a perfect workout plan. It's got the squats, the deadlifts, the bench press, but it's really in the execution of doing it, right? So just having the resources available, like, what is the best investment? I don't know. You know, what are your goals? What's your objective? What's your risk tolerance? So being able to learn and then have the ability to apply that, I think when you can make that more available to more people, you're going to have a better outcome. And just the studies all show this, the more financially secure that your employees are, the more access they have to information, the better they're going to perform, the less anxiety they have. And just on a human level, the more grateful they're going to be to you as somebody that has an influential role in their life.
You know, that's so clear in so many ways. And I think you simplified it right there at the beginning in a short, sweet little package, leading by example. And then you supported that with something I also believe in, and that is pulling in the people around you so they can learn it, understand it, and also soak in that knowledge and information that may be beneficial to you and help you, right? It's just sharing that beneficial factor, that importance of something. And I also believe in the same sense, when you're sharing that valuable insight, that valuable information, and you're bringing them into the mix, and you're leading by example, and you're motivating, inspiring, you're educating, it's going to have a massive ripple effect. And not only that goes a long way with your employees, with your spouse, with your kids, to where now they want to listen more, they want to follow more, they want to invest more into you or what it is you're doing, because they feel that investment coming right back to them. I find that really, really powerful. And real brief, could you share just a quick example of a leader who's transformed their life because of their financial discipline?
Yeah, I can think of numerous people, right? But I think when it comes to financial success, I think you said it earlier, right? It's just being willing to sacrifice and really work towards what you want. I think the best example I have in terms of financial success, sharing with other people, empowering other people, really the CEO, president, owner of IMG, the firm that I'm at, a guy by the name of Jeff Applebaum, just an incredibly consistent supporter of the people that work at this firm. There's a couple of really, really great stories. And obviously they're true stories. He's helped people out through cancer payments, you know, maybe things they couldn't afford. These are people that work at the firm. You know, just caring for your people like that, if and when you have the means to, but you know, on a less drastic level, right? Just being there for your people. I can think just personally on a few occasions, I've gone to him with some frustrations, personally, mentally, financially, and having that open door policy where he can make it a safe place to work, where he knows that he can help and I can rely on him to help. That's really how you empower your people and become a really successful leader, in my opinion.
I think that's fantastic insight, Nick. I absolutely love having you here. Where can our listeners find you?
Yeah, if you just want to Google me, that's probably the easiest, but Google Nick Baker, IMG Financial Group. It's in Houston, Texas. Anybody's welcome to give me a phone call. My number is 832-369-9419. But yeah, if you look me up on Google or LinkedIn, I'm pretty easy to contact. Be happy to visit, have a conversation with anybody that wants to talk. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Don't go anywhere. We'll return shortly and we'll be joined by our next guest to explore even more powerful leadership strategies.
Success isn't given, it's earned. And earning it means becoming the person who deserves it. The bottom line is where we cut through the chaos to simplify success, uncovering the strategies, mindset, and resilience it takes to win. Real stories, expert insights, and practical tools. Because the only way to the top is by putting in the work. This is The Bottom Line.
Now, let's continue the conversation on leveling up leadership with our next guest, Alan Mikulaj. Alan is an ICF certified coach focused on purpose-driven leadership. He helps people understand their leadership styles and core values to create lasting impact. Alan, welcome to the show.
Ryan, thank you so much. I just want to first say congratulations on your premiere and what an honor it is to be here with you today on this first show for The Bottom Line. I know you're going to be making an impact with people for quite a while, transforming lives. Just, it's truly an honor. Congratulations, Ryan.
Thank you very much. And it's such a pleasure to have you here because I definitely value your understanding, your experience, and your knowledge. So I'm going to ask you such a big question when it comes to leadership development. And this is something that can take years to unpack for so many people, but I think you're so great at explaining this. What's the role of self-awareness in effective leadership?
You know, when you sent me the pre-show email with that possibility of that being one of the questions, I at first was not self-aware and sort of went, well, you know, I've been teaching leaders about purpose-driven leadership and life mission and leadership philosophy statements and a whole host of other range of topics. And so I just thought, I'll be able to answer that on a whim. And so I started thinking a little bit about that, you know, and reflecting on it. And I realized, Ryan, that it was really difficult to pin down exactly what we mean by self-awareness. And so, I mean, you know, like a lot of people, you know, we've heard of things like mindfulness and meditation and contemplation and you know, reflecting on your purpose and core values and that sort of thing. But it was really, really difficult for me to start nailing down exactly what I was going to tell you. And so what I ended up doing is something that I do whenever I get stuck like that. And that's, I turn to the literature. And so I turned and did a Google search under scholar, you know, and looked for studies and started trying to peruse through what was meaningful and seemed to resonate. And I landed on two studies. The first one was a study by Tasha Urich, and it was published in HBR in 2018. And this, you know, it was really amazing about the study was that it was so comprehensive. They surveyed like over 5,000 people. They went through 800 different studies on mindfulness and self-awareness. And then they narrowed down through a pretty rigorous process, 50 people that they could interview. And so I was impressed with the volume of people and what they had done. And the most amazing thing about it was, at first glance, was this cognitive bias that we have that it was something like almost everyone that they asked, are you self-aware or above average in your self-awareness? And they're like, oh yeah, you know, sort of like I probably would have answered if you were to ask me something like that. But when they analyzed their data, it was only somewhere between 10 and 15% of people who actually were self-aware.
Wow.
And that's a common bias. I mean, we've known about this in psychology for years and years. I mean, the first one I remember when I was studying with my master's at Sam Houston State University was around driving. And, you know, when you ask people, are you an above average driver? You know, everybody's like, yeah. Something like
that. Yeah, everyone wants to jump on board and say they're the best at it, or they're that top level of it, right? That confirmation bias. Yep. So how does that tie into, how does that self-awareness tie into effective leadership? What makes that difference? How does that really impact a leader when they are self-aware?
Well, and that's what, you know, that great question, you know, it gets us to start thinking about what does it mean to be self-aware. And surprisingly to me, how some of the programs that I offer aligned with their findings without me even being able to articulate it in the rubric of self-awareness. And so, you know, kudos to you. An example of why you're going to be such a great host is you have such great questions. And so what Tasha and her colleagues found was that there are two forms of self-awareness under the rubric that they studied, and that is an internal self-awareness and an external self-awareness. And the internal self-awareness was what I think most of us probably kind of think about. You know, it's that I know my core values, I know my passions, I might have, you know, a good idea about my strengths and my weaknesses, and maybe a little bit about how I interact with others. And so that was their, you know, understanding and finding. And I think most of us could sort of intuitively just say, yeah, that's what self-awareness is. But what was interesting was that they also found that there's this external self-awareness, and that's an understanding of how others see us with those same sort of elements. So is my self-awareness of my values, my passions, my strengths, how I fit with the environment, how others react to me, are others seeing that as well? And that was actually how they teased out to find their 50 people to interview, was that when they did the survey, you not only took the survey for yourself, but somebody who was close to you had to take the survey about you. And if that aligned, you know, if that aligned between the person or the external and the internal, then that was one of the criteria that they used to define somebody as being self-aware.
That is really interesting when you think about it. I like the aspect of this study being done to where someone takes the survey and then someone close to them takes it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you a different perspective where two perspectives really come together to express that external awareness. And I would agree with you. I would say my first thought process when it comes to self-awareness is that internal self-awareness, not so much that external.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, based on my experience, the best leaders have a really, really strong external awareness. They're able to see what their influence, what their ideas, what their efforts, what their disciplines, what all of their decisions do to the people around them, so that they can continuously learn, grow, and make positive impacts. What would you say your experiences with individuals that have actually achieved both? How do you identify that? Whether someone is either heavy on one side of that scale, either really self-aware or really externally self-aware, where does that fall? And do you know people that are able to achieve both at the same time, becoming kind of this completely aware individual?
All right. Did you read the study? Because your question aligns exactly with what they found. And that is that the two different types of self-awareness, that internally self-aware of who I am, what I believe, what I value, and the external awareness of how I fit into the environment and how others react to me, completely and totally separate. Just because you are strong in one type does not necessarily equate to you being strong in the other. And so what that means is that we have to nurture both. And so, you know, we have to first take that time, block that time initially to discover who we are, to be able to identify that. To clarify that for ourselves, and then to be able to articulate that, where, you know, a lot of people say, you know, find your voice. Well, that finding your voice starts with finding yourself. And so what she found in the study and in my experience is that people who are more internally self-aware, they tend to have higher job satisfaction, stronger relationships. They seem more satisfied with life. And so that internal is important, but not at the detriment to external self-awareness, and especially for leaders, right? You know, so leaders who can have an awareness of how others are reacting to me, and are they hearing that voice? Am I consistent in, and am I, can I talk the talk, and can I walk the walk, right?
Mm. I really like how you put that. I find that really valuable, because it's one thing to look a certain way, sound a certain way, but it's a completely different aspect when you can actually take action on something that follows with what you said, right? That also ties into a certain level of integrity. And as a leader, your integrity is everything. Your ability to lead others, to have influence that can make an impact, is based on your integrity. So I would definitely agree that this study makes a lot of sense, and it can definitely open up a lot of insight, especially with how you've presented this and talked about it. It makes me question my own understanding of self-awareness. Am I more of an internal self-aware individual or external awareness? It raises a lot of interesting points on where we as leaders can improve and how our work on ourselves can improve our ability to lead others. This is fantastic insight, and I'm truly enjoying this conversation. Where would you say you've had big moves in helping others identify their type of awareness?
Well, when I was with Common Spirit Health, it's one of the largest nonprofit health systems in the United States, if not the largest. I ran a high potential leadership development program there, and the cornerstone workshop that started came from Bill Kousis and Barry Posner in their leadership challenge. And they have a really strong mini part of that workshop that's where it starts, is helping leaders to identify and clarify their core values and their leadership philosophy.
That's powerful.
Powerful. And it was that work that then drove me to develop a more full and rich purpose-driven leadership development program myself, because that's their segment in that workshop it's just a small segment of it. And so it got, having had a life mission since 1987,
I'm going to jump in right there.
Okay.
We'll be right back to continue this incredible conversation, and stay with us for the next section.
Success isn't given, it's earned. And earning it means becoming the person who deserves it. The bottom line is where we cut through the chaos to simplify success, uncovering the strategies, mindset, and resilience it takes to win. Real stories, expert insights, and practical tools. Because the only way to the top is by putting in the work. This is The Bottom Line.
Welcome back. Let's continue our discussion with Alan Mikulaj. It's time to focus on something that Mr. Alan is so educated in, is well studied, a lot of experience, and that is purpose-driven leadership. And I'd like to ask, how do you define purpose-driven leadership, and why is it essential in today's business world?
Well, from our earlier conversation, Ryan, the idea of being self-aware and beginning to identify what my core values are, what my purpose in life is, how I interact with others, with those core elements of my being, that is the starting point. And I say, let me emphasize, starting point for purpose-driven leadership. And one of the things that really, I guess a lot of people don't understand then, is once I've got that, is how do I leverage that then? And that's where you take it to the next level. How do I communicate it? How do I use my purpose? How do I use my core values in my leadership? But that's not all there is. There's also then a team level and an organizational level. And so to fully master purpose, meaning and purpose, both for yourself and others, that's what purpose-driven leadership is. It's that tapping into and leveraging my own personal meaning and purpose, my constituents and stakeholders and direct reports, meaning and purpose, and organizational, and maybe even sometimes beyond the organization. In a nutshell, that would be the condensed definition for the way I see purpose-driven leadership.
Yeah, I think you packaged that really well, actually. It's funny because my first true introduction to your understanding of purpose-driven leadership was while I was writing my chapter for The Change. and your influence definitely poured out on the page for me. And it helped me strengthen my three principles of success. And number one, the most important one, in my opinion, is purpose.
Yeah.
Purpose for me is your reason why. Why do you get out of bed? Why do you do what you do? What's the point of you doing anything at all? You've got to have that purpose, that why. And like you said, you've got to understand it for yourself before it can even bleed over into anyone else or to even be utilized for others. And I think that's another part of this topic I really want to dive into. And that's how can purpose-driven leadership improve team performance and morale? What impact does that leader have with that purpose-driven leadership?
And that's such a great question. And it ties back also to our earlier conversation on self-awareness. So if you remember, I mentioned there was a second study, and I'll try to keep that brief so that we don't dwell too much on self-awareness, but it ties very directly to what your question is. And so study out of Australia, a couple of years after Tasha's study came out, and very similarly, they also discovered two types of self-awareness, but they were looking at it through the rubric of authentic leadership, because you know authentic leadership is a big buzzword in leadership development and practice right now. But they were also looking at what the academics call leader endorsement. And so leader endorsement to us would be, do people want to follow me? You know, do people want to work for me? Do the people who are on my team now want to stay, or are they trying, you know, are they thinking about bugging out the door? And so they were trying, and so they found that, very similar to the original study, that personal self-awareness was one, and that was almost mapped exactly to what Tasha's study was. But then they had a second type called collective self-awareness, and it was quite a bit different from what Tasha and her colleagues found. And that was that the leader has an awareness of their organization's values and mission, their strategy, and at a team level, and sort of a history of who we are, our culture, and how do I fit into that as the leader? And so that ties in exactly to your question then about how do I leverage purpose-driven leadership and inspire those that are on my team and around me. And it's exactly, you know, what you're talking about, that it, or what we were talking about just a second ago, that starts right here with me, elevates to my team, and then to the organization.
No, I think there's something that is easily overlooked in this, and that's the value of the discipline and effort put into yourself and how that shows outward. Our previous guest, Mr. Nick Baker, he brought up a good point, leading by example. And when I think of purpose-driven leadership, I don't think you can truly lead by example if you don't have a true sense and understanding of purpose. And I think that is where a lot of that impact to your team and the people around you lies. And that's when you have true conviction in something, you're more likely to express it in big ways and to live it and to show it and to move with confidence. And I think that movement with confidence because of purpose is a good way to introduce what that is to others and to build your team's confidence. And not only that, but the trust in you as a leader. So something really important that I think would complement this topic is, what are the key differences between managing and leading with purpose?
Well, it's a It's funny you asked that question because I used to do an exercise, an opening exercise with leaders, and we'd have them go look up the root origins of the word manage and the word lead. And when you go back and look at the origins of the word manage, it goes to the Latin manus or hand. And so the Greeks used that term for horse handling, managing. So you're managing that horse. Where lead, and that's where my company gets its name, is the root origin is an old English word called laden, which is to be a journey guide or to be on a journey with someone. And so you can see right away that just from the root origins of the word manage and lead, what that is. And so when no matter what level you're at an organization, but especially for people closer to the front line, your team leads, your supervisors, your managers and directors, when you begin the hard work, and you're right, Ryan, it can be for most people, it can be difficult to block that time and to go through the effort of identifying what my core values are, why God put me here on this earth, why am I a leader or why am I a manager? But when they do that, they begin to elevate themselves beyond just being a manager. And when we begin to lead with purpose and authenticity, then we inspire others. You know, we boost engagement, we boost productivity, we boost our own engagement, and that even further elevates other people's engagement. So you get in this positive feedback loop with your team. And so when leaders at any level begin to practice and leverage purpose-driven leadership, it just impacts a whole host of outcome metrics. I call it the foundational or cornerstone leadership competency. You can go take a course on crucial conversations or difficult conversations, but if you're not rooted, like you said, in integrity and in authenticity and who you show up consistently day after day with meaning and purpose and guidance and inspiration, that crucial conversation is going to be even more difficult to have without it. But when you have that, and especially if you have shared team values and a shared team mission to lean on, you now have tools to help you move that conversation in much more powerful ways than you ever would before.
I really love how you separated managing and leading, especially all the way from the root of the word. I find that really powerful, and it gives a little bit more understanding into how that really applies. And there's always an image that stays in my brain of the difference of leading and managing. Old image of a boss sitting on a desk with a team pulling him. That's the manager. The leader is the guy in the front of that line, pulling the rope first, helping everyone else find the way. And I love this conversation, and I love what you have to give. And I think the audience is going to want to really kind of reach out to you and learn more of your perspective. So what is the best way to find you?
Real quick, before, I just want to share, you manage things, you lead people.
That's powerful.
Manage budgets, manage schedules, but you lead people. You're on a journey. You're a journey guide. But best way for people to get a hold of me is at my website, alanmikolaj.com. I'm on YouTube, I'm on Facebook, I'm on LinkedIn. Reach out, connect, DM me. I'd love to start a conversation.
That was really powerful. I truly appreciate your time, and I always learn something from you, whether it be something super obvious or something I have to go back and write about, read about, educate myself, and just truly understand, because I never know what gold you're going to drop and how it's going to help one of my clients later. So this was a fantastic discussion, and we started with the problem when leadership falls short. Businesses and teams suffer. Thanks to our guests, we uncovered valuable insights on financial leadership, purpose-driven leadership, and the steps leaders can take to level up, whether it's improving financial discipline or understanding personal leadership styles. Today's takeaways can help you become the leader you were meant to be. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ryan Herpin, and I hope today's discussion has provided you with valuable insights to help you level up your leadership. And remember, leadership is not about being in charge. It's about taking charge of those, taking care of those in your charge. Keep striving, keep growing, and we'll see you next time on The Bottom Line.
This has been a Now Media Networks feature presentation. All rights reserved.